transparent aluminum?
That's the ticket, laddie.
Welcome to the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, the podcast that, despite any amount of 90s nostalgia, definitely acknowledges BTS as superior to BSB. I'm your host, Taylor Cole, and with me today are Dan, Edge of 47 Coice.
Just like the white-winged dove, I'm gonna kick your butt.
David, Benny Agbayani Roth.
I'm the strong side of a platoon with Timo Perez. Again, it's more intimidating if you know who these people are.
And Margaret Hula Hoop Willison.
I am here to hula whoop your asses.
Hello, and thank you to everyone for joining us today. Here we are in the last playoff match of our Season 2 Battle of the Podcast. It's the Hired Goons Division Finals, which will determine who will advance to next week's Season 2 Championship match. Helping me out today will be Score Master Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hi there, Taylor. I'm doing pretty good, but Dave and I just need to get some candles up in here. The BattleBox folks were broadcasting from this booth yesterday, and it just smells like Discovery Channel.
Well, I'm sure it smells better than it did during the Comedy Central years. And working the boards is production master Dave. Hi, Dave.
Gnomes were living in the walls, and the gnomes needed me to stay and be their friend.
Well, we'll give Dave a moment to deal with that problem while we kick off our game with a round of My Champion. That's the game where each of our players has chosen a personal champion from the world of pop culture. The catch is, we're going to choose the battle that those champions are fighting. From Slate.com's Mom and Dad Are Fighting podcast, Dan Coice, who is your champion today?
My champion is Rupert Mannion, the billionaire former soccer team owner from Ted Lasso.
From Defector.com, David Roth, who have you chosen as your champion?
I chose, wisely or unwisely, Wyatt Russell's character Dud from Lodge 49. He's not really that good at a lot of things. I just like his attitude.
Excellent. A regular voice from NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour and one-third of the Appointment Television podcast, Margaret H. Willison, who are you championing today?
I figured it was good to go with a champion I knew really well, so it is going to be Paris Geller from Gilmore Girls.
All right, all three champions are locked in. Production Master Dave is going to serve as our judge today. So let's spin that scenario wheel. Today's scenario, who would make the best pitch to the Olympic Selection Committee to have their hometown host the games? Dan, why would Rupert Mannion give a great Olympic Committee pitch?
I'll tell you in one word, money. The examples of Salt Lake City and of Rio should show us that the only thing the International Olympic Committee cares about in making those decisions is how many billions of dollars can be pumped into the organization through shady, nefarious means. Rupert Mannion has billions of dollars. He is shady and nefarious. He would happily hand, you know, a Jaguar over to every single person on the committee in exchange for returning the Olympics to London. It'd be piece of cake.
Thank you, Dan. And David, make the case for Dud from Lodge 49.
This is a tough one because Los Angeles doesn't want the Olympics and Dud represents Long Beach. But I think in a lot of ways, his love for that community, which he cares about not wisely maybe, but too well, would work in the sense that he's very well connected with the community there. He's very familiar with the wealth of disused industrial space that could be gotten rid of to create, say, a swimming plex or a velodrome as needed. And that sort of thing is something that you can't really put a price on, which is good because he has no money and keeps having to sell his car so that he can find a way to sleep indoors for a night.
And Margaret, tell us about the pitch from Paris Geller from Gilmore Girls.
I mean, this is just an open and shut case because Paris is the single most type A, organized, skilled, argumentative person, but also just like wildly, profoundly intimidating. So yes, everyone on the Olympic Committee would leave the room in tears. And initially that might predispose them against whatever town in Connecticut Paris happened to be representing. Let's just decide it's New Haven. Why not? However, they would realize that the Olympics are so unpopular with all of the cities they're supposed to be hosted by that they needed a bully in their corner to keep all of the local people and politicians in line, and that no one would be able to corral the locals better than Paris. And Paris would take the day.
Three excellent arguments, but only one champion's going to come out on top. Production master and Judge Dave, who's it going
to
be?
Well, let's start with our outlier first, and that is Dud from a show that's very dear to my heart, Lodge 49. His back is up against the wall on this one, for sure. He is not very competent, but the one thing that Dave didn't mention that I think is like a one in a million chance, we'll never know because the show was canceled, but maybe they do eventually figure out alchemy and then he has tons and tons and tons of mystical money.
Totally fair point.
But that was not the argument made, but I would like to see that happen. So it really comes down to the forceful personalities of Rupert and Paris. Now, we would all love to see an Olympics somehow in Stars Hollow. But I don't think it has the infrastructure, and I don't think Paris, no matter how bossy, can really get away with just out of sheer force of will, making stadiums and velodromes and swimming pools and such appear. And look, when it comes down to it, Dan Coyce made the essential argument. It's all about money because these are very corrupt people. FIFA, Olympics, they're all the same. Money talks, walks. Dan Coyce. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. It's my own podcast and I can't swear. Money talks, bull poopy walks. Dan Coyce, the winner of my champion.
Congratulations, Dan Coyce. You've not only won my champion, but you'll go first in round one and get a shot at the half point. Getting this right could give you a competitive advantage that could break a tie before a tie even happens. Here is your half point question. Downton Abbey's Hugh Bonneville starred in a BBC comedy as the head of deliverance of the Olympic Deliverance Commission. The show's title is A Year. What is that title?
Well, it seems like it would be the year that London hosted the Olympics, obviously. And thank goodness that I know that that year is divisible by four. And so that really narrows it down. I mean, so it's not 2003 or 2002 or 2001 or 2005. Or six or seven or nine or really a multitude of other possible years. So I'm going to go ahead and say that that year is 2004.
2012 on that one. And specifically spelled out the words 2012.
In order to distinguish it from the four-star movie about the world falling apart, 2012.
I imagine Roland Emmerich took legal action against the Olympic Committee, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, you missed the half point, but you still get to go first in round one. Go big or go gnome. If Gnomeo and Juliet can change genres radically enough to have Sherlock Gnomes as its sequel, there's no reason to stop there. We can build an entire gnome cinematic universe. Unfortunately, coming up with the ideas for spin-offs is tough, so in the proud tradition of Sherlock Gnomes, we're just going to replace a word in the title of an existing movie with gnome or gnomes, because kids are dumb, they're not going to notice. So a movie in which a gnome thwarts robbers after he's left behind when his parents go on vacation would be called...
Gnome Alone.
Gnome Alone, and that would get you 10 points. If you need a hint, I'll tell you a bit more about the movie that our spinoff is based on, but then the answer is only worth 5 points. Dan Coyce, we'll start with you. A sheltered gnome royal escapes from her handlers and hooks up with a reporter to ride a Vespa around the ancient capital of the Gnomon Empire.
I would like a hint, please.
A 1953 Gregory Peck movie.
That would be the classic Gnomon Holiday.
Correct for 5 points after the hint. For David, it's a post-apocalyptic landscape where disputes are settled through combat with bungee cords. Two gnomes enter, one gnome leaves.
Oh my god, is this Mad Max Beyond Thunder Gnome?
Yes, for 10 points.
Why'd you make me say that? You invite me on your show, and then you make that a right answer, and I have to say it.
All right, Margaret, here's your first gnomified movie. A dramatization of the events leading up to the gnome fight at the Gnome K Corral.
Hi, gnome?
This 1993 Kurt Russell movie is... Tombs Gnome. Tombs Gnome.
High Gnome is really funny, though.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have to give you a you're on thin ice counselor on Tomb Gnome. I'm not really sure.
I mean, it only gets worse from here.
Oh, no.
All right, back for Dan Coyce. A movie in which two slackers make a bathroom stop, only to end up spending a year trapped with a gnome. But through tending that gnome's garden, they learn valuable lessons about environmentalism.
I would once again like a hint.
A 1996 Pauly Shore movie.
Oh. Of course, this is the fabled Bio Gnome.
Correct.
Oh, God.
Over to David. Not far from retirement, a beleaguered gnome policing the border is confronted with an assassin who brandishes a cattle gun.
Oh, God. This is... You guys are really pushing the limits of what a podcast should be permitted to be. That having been said, gnome country for old men.
Wow.
Yes. Unreal.
Wow.
All right, Margaret. A reporter uncovers a disastrous near meltdown in a Los Angeles gnome production facility, but Big Gnome will stop at nothing to shut her up.
Okay, I think I know this one. I just have to try and remember what the second half of the woman's name is. I think this is the one that Sally Fields won her Oscar for. I think it's Gnoma Ray. No!
I really like that answer, though.
Again, that's better than whatever the actual
answer
is.
It really is.
Dang it.
The China Sid Gnome is that one.
Oh,
the China
come
Sid
on.
Gnome with Jane
Mine
Fonda.
Mine was much better. Oh. We started Gnome with an Audrey Hepburn movie. I was so optimistic.
Let's make a note of that for Gnome Game 2,
yes.
Though.
There's no place like Gnome, the sequel to this game.
Oh, great.
All right, back to Dan Coyce. An American ambassador's new garden gnome is secretly replaced with an evil gnome who's destined to bring about the end times.
An American ambassador's garden gnome, if I hear you correctly, mm-hmm. is replaced with an evil garden gnome, if I'm understanding what you're saying, who is going to bring about the end times?
Correct on all counts.
Great. I would also like a clue.
A 1976 Gregory Peck movie that was remade in 2006.
I believe this to be, of course, Cyrano de Bergerac.
I'm embarrassed that that's not an answer in this game. Margaret knows the answer to this one.
David knew it first.
But I feel like Margaret should get to say it.
Thanks, I'll just get credit for I know the Gregory Peck movies. The Gnomon?
Yes, The Gnomon.
What is that even a pun on?
The Omen.
Oh, The Omen.
Yeah. It's all
Duh,
for you, Dan.
Dan.
All right, for David, a teenaged Marvel hero tries to balance the pressures of high school and an ongoing battle with his gnome nemesis. The catch, he's taking that gnome's daughter to the dance.
Oh, boy. See, this is where me not being as up on the broader Spider-Verse stuff doesn't help as much. I'm going to... I'll shoot my shot. Is it Spider-Man Far From Gnome?
Ugh, nah, no.
Not quite. Which one is it, Margaret?
Spider-Man Gnome Coming. Which really sounds different.
Yeah.
It's real different this way.
Yep. Well, there's no right answers in this category, but...
Yeah. All right, Margaret, our last gnomified movie before a score break. A gnome who's been lost and buried narrates the story of what happens to her family and her killer after she's dead.
Yes, I know this one. And I was like, I'm going to ask for a hint. I'm not asking for a hint. This is The Lovely Gnomes.
Yes, and on that great answer, we'll go into a score break from Score Master Dan.
So far, Margaret and Dan have 10 points each and are angry at this round for some reason. David is in the lead with 20 points.
I think we're all angry at the round.
Yeah.
All right, back to Dan Coyce. A lovelorn romance novelist is caught up in the search for a precious trove of gnomes in Colombia and finds love with an exotic bird smuggler.
I would once again like a hint, please.
A 1984 Kathleen Turner movie.
I think this must be Romancing the Gnome.
Correct.
See, I would have gone with Nomancing the Stone again, but I...
either is definitely okay.
Well, actually, on this one, the clue points to stone gnome, so I would right. not accept that.
Yeah, nice try, Roth. Yeah.
I still maintain that I'm correct.
Just remember the rigorous internal logic that governs this podcast. Yeah.
All right, for David, in the 1930s, a gnome is falsely accused of assault and is given the choice between the military and jail, something his accuser comes to deeply regret.
All right, so this, I feel like I just should get a clue here, because this is still vague enough in my mind that I'm thinking of 30s movies when I probably shouldn't be.
A 2007 James McAvoy movie.
I'm not really as up on J-Mac's catalog as I should be here. Is there another clue where you just tell me what the name of the movie is?
But not what word you change into gnome.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I just got nothing. I ought to pass on it.
Go for it, Dan. Go for it.
Dan Coyce looks excited on this one.
I believe it's a gnome mint.
Which is so mad at you about.
Featuring the legendary 2-minute shot of the gnomes on the beach at Normandy.
See, that is not how I would. I read that book and I feel like I saw that movie.
No, it was. I've seen that movie, I've read that book, and that was a very confusing framing. A
yeah, really like, weird plot synopsis of Atonement, yes.
It's like describing the plot of Citizen Kane based on like Everett Sloan's monologue about seeing a girl one time.
Though it is the second appearance in this game after The Lovely Gnomes of actress Saoirse Knowman.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
All right, for Margaret. A low-rent TV executive discovers a strange signal that shows gnomes violently torturing one another in this techno-surrealist body horror flick.
Well, luckily, I'm not even tempted to not ask for a hint. Please give me a hint.
A 1983 David Cronenberg movie.
God, wouldn't it just be David Cronenberg? The only David Cronen movie I can think of, I can't even come up with the name of, but it's one where Jeremy Irons plays a pair of twins, and I think one of them is a gynecologist, and I watched it one afternoon on TV, and it took me and my friends like an hour to figure out that there were two characters that Jeremy Irons was playing. It wasn't just one Jeremy Irons. I don't think it's that one. I can't remember the name of that one. Oh, yes, I can. I think it's like Body Doubles. But either way, there's no gnome thing. So I'm just going to go with Gnome Head.
May I?
David Roth?
It's Video Gnome.
I'm sorry, it's Video Dronome.
All right, back to Dan Coyce. The fate of the world depends on a crew of time-traveling, whale-seeking gnomes who invent transparent aluminum along the way.
Oh.
This would be the first movie I ever saw an advanced screening of at the age of 11, somehow in a theater in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Gnome.
Transparent aluminum?
That's the ticket, laddie.
For 10 points, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Gnome. Back to David. It's an incredibly gory flick about a small town sheriff leading a posse to confront a tribe of man-eating gnomes.
All right. I need to... Well, actually, I think I need to be bold on this one, because if you can't be bold in something that requires you to say the word gnome repeatedly over like a 10-minute stretch, when can you do it? Is this the film Gnome Tomahawk? Thank you.
Nice big swing.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
It is extremely gory. I don't remember the gnomes, but I'll have to watch it again.
For Margaret, a boy finds out that he has magic powers and faces peril when he attempts to retrieve a gnome that can grant immortality.
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Gnome?
Yes. Wow.
Based on the British book, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Gnome.
Yeah.
I had that ready to go in the chamber as a follow-up joke, Margaret. So thank you for getting that for
stealing
me.
Stealing your joke.
And that'll wrap up round one. Next up, a score update from Scoremaster Dan, and on to round two of Pop Culture Trivia Playoffs.
See, y'all glad you came today?
Yeah, so I'm feeling good, feeling strong. I like what's happening in my brain right now.
Yeah, there really is no place like Nome.
Right now, David is in the lead with 30 points, Dan's got 25, Margaret is just behind with 20, but that means she'll get to go first in round two.
Thank you, Scoremaster Dan. Still a bunch of game to go and a little extra help coming to Margaret. It's the Threequalizer. Margaret, you're about to get a quick chance to make up some ground with a Threequalizer question. I'll give you a question that has exactly three answers, and you have three guesses to match as many of them as you can. 10 points for each correct match. Your Threequalizer question is, the covers of the first three issues of Entertainment Weekly, beginning February 16, 1990, respectively featured a country music artist, a 20th century war, and a Tom Clancy movie. Name those three cover story subjects.
A 20th century war. That's a wild one. I'm going to guess the themiest 20th century war, and I'm just going to go ahead and say World War II. Great, 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 great way to play me, Entertainment Weekly. For country star, I'm going to say Garth Brooks. Oh, boy. I'll take a stab at the war again, just because we've only got so many of those. They're the fewest 20th century wars. I'm going to guess the Vietnam War. Hey, there we go.
Circling back for 10 points. Very nice. The other things you were looking for were K.D. Lang was the country music star on the very first issue of Entertainment Weekly, and that Tom Clancy movie was The Hunt for Red October.
I am so glad I guessed the war.
The Vietnam cover story was Why Can't We Get Out of Vietnam? It's supposed to be about like pop culture's obsession with Vietnam and why we're still making movies about Vietnam in 1990.
That's probably better than picking. My first thought was like a contemporaneous war, which would be in extremely poor taste. Like they're all like,
yeah.
Right. Know. It's like Gulf War. What shows do we like the best? Wolf Blitzer. He's hot.
Yeah, right.
The big thing they were linking it to was a novel. The Things They Carried was their thing that had just come out.
The last time a novel was featured on the cover of Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah, I'm sure I was supposed to read that book at some point in high school, and I definitely didn't.
Well, with that, there is no better way to get to know our players even better than hearing more about their personal tastes and ideas from the world of pop culture. First, we have Dan Coyce. Dan, in this weird year where theatrical movie going is practically non-existent for most, what's a warm memory you have of one of your favorite movie watching experiences in a theater?
Well, of course, it would have to be the time that I saw The Bourne Identity in a theater in Yonkers. And 1 minute before the movie started, my wife and I were sitting there in our seats, and an entire family trooped in front of us in order. It was the dad, the mom, and then their teenager, and then their 10-year-old, and then their 5-year-old, who was carrying a carrier with an infant in it. And then they all sat down right in front of us and enjoyed the R-rated The Bourne Identity along with us.
Oh, amazing. I honestly, even though that's inconvenient, I would kill to have that experience right now. That sounds incredible.
Right. I would take it in a heartbeat. Absolutely.
And David, for you, which major director, not normally known for romantic comedies, would you like to see make a straight up rom-com?
This was long enough ago that I did not remember that the answer that I'd given you was Darren Aronofsky, but I'm delighted that that thought ever occurred to me. Just both because the rom and the com elements in both Darren Aronofsky movies that I've seen have been so vanishingly small that the idea of him just trying to lean into normal human interactions, like how would he shoot a meet cute? How would he shoot a coffee date? How would he shoot like the guy running through the airport terminal and being like, I was wrong, you know, Emily Blunt? Like, I think that there's a lot there to think about. I would probably want to listen to the Kronos Quartet score than I'd want to watch a movie, but there's still a nice thought that I apparently had at one point.
And that movie is called Sweetie Pie.
Yeah.
I feel like if you just like creatively recut The Fountain, you could maybe turn it into a rom-com.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely elements of comedy in that I don't know to what extent Aronofsky was aware of it at the time.
But. And I'm sure he was trying to include elements of romance. Whether he succeeded or not is anyone's guess, although I suppose we could ask Rachel Weisz.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah, that's true. You can't, I mean, like, the idea of, like, turning your future wife into, like, you're going to turn into a plant at the end of this and then a star. And that's how I feel about you. And that's how I want to be with you that way. Mm-hmm. It worked.
And Margaret, for you, which two characters from pop culture do you most want to see get together romantically? Who are you shipping?
So who I'm shipping, I have a primary couple, but it was inspired by a secondary couple. At some point in my prodigious career of television rewatching, I was rewatching a season of Veronica Mars as I was consuming The Good Wife. And it must have been one of the seasons where Alicia was interacting with a private detective. And I thought to myself that Alicia, Florek, and Keith Mars would be an incredible couple, and that he's really exactly the man that she's looking for. And that had a certain amount of appeal for me, but it didn't have the same cataclysmic reorienting that realizing that Kalinda Sharma and Veronica Mars are made for each other did. And I just, I'm putting it out there, it would just be like spy versus spy, but hot and romantic. And it would be great. And neither of those characters has a male love interest worth a damn. And they deserve better. And Kalinda already knows she's bisexual. And she could just get Veronica's head in the right place. Because Veronica obviously is. We all saw her chemistry with Mac. So that's mine.
Excellent. Thank you, Margaret. And that's going to take us right into round two, which is today entitled A Likely Cover Story. The things that seem really important to pop culture at 1 minute sometimes don't seem quite so important later on, as we learned with our Threequalizer question today. So in this game, I'm going to read you an Entertainment Weekly cover headline from sometime in the last 30 years, and you have to tell me what in the world that headline was about. For instance, if a 2012 cover headline read, Katniss Fever, How a Fierce Female Fighter Became a Global Obsession, you'd know that that cover headline was about...
The Hunger Games!
That answer would get you 20 points. If you're not quite sure, I can tell you a little bit about what's being covered in the article, but then a correct answer is only worth 10 points. Then as a quick follow-up, I will list three topics that might have been listed on the cover of that same issue, and you have to identify which one was not mentioned on the cover for 10 more points. We'll start it off with Margaret. From November 1991, You Can't Touch the Most Ambitious Man in Pop.
Is this truly MC Hammer?
Correct.
Wow. It really was a different time. I'm glad being six when that came out didn't hamper me.
Now, but which of these topics was not in that November 1991 cover? Was it Nirvana's Nevermind, Planet Hollywood, or Carol Burnett?
Yeah, now being six is going to be a problem, but I think... It's Nirvana's Nevermind? Seems a little early for that? Yes, great.
Absolutely correct.
Thank God.
All right, for Dan, from May 2003, Freaky Evil Twins, a 14-minute car chase, and 1,000 dazzling effects shots.
May 2003. So I was only 6 years old at the time. All right, well, it's not... the Jeremy Irons gynecologist David Nomenberg movie that Margaret was trying to come up with before. It's a little too early for that. I would like a clue, please.
The article covers the real mysteries of what was set up in the first movie, though it turns out people don't actually care so much.
That was great. Thanks. That provided me with just enormous amounts of further information, which I will now use to guess... Speed 2 Cruise Control.
David, do you know this one?
It's Matrix Reloaded.
Yes, the Matrix Reloaded.
The twins.
Yep.
But Dan, which of these topics was not on that same cover? Ken Jennings, Buffy, or Dawson's Creek?
In 2003, I think it is unlikely that Ken Jennings was on that cover.
Correct for 10 points. And over to David for your first Entertainment Weekly cover headline. From March 2018, Vengeful Androids plus Trippy Mysteries plus Strange New World. Season 2 is a story of parks and recreation.
Oh boy. This sounds like Westworld. Is it Westworld? All right.
Season 2 of Westworld on HBO.
I kind of got to give it up for parks and recreation. That's pretty good.
It's no gnome pun, but it's up there.
Yeah.
Still a follow-up for David. Which one of these topics was not on that same Westworld cover? Was it The Good Fight, Queer Eye, or Annihilation?
This is tough. I feel like Annihilation maybe wouldn't have made the cover, and so that is the only real guess that I have. Is it Annihilation? Good movie, though.
Yes, everyone doing great on the follow-ups today. Yeah.
We love the bear that talks with the human voice, don't we, folks? The scary bear from Annihilation?
Always.
Yeah. Oh my god, is he here? Is he on the Skype call?
I phoned a friend.
All right, over to Margaret from May 1999. It's a wrap, but does blank have a monster smash on his hands?
I'm gonna ask for a hint.
The article covers CGI and the long history of previous movies with the same antagonist.
Oh, okay. So then this is about Godzilla. Dag? What is it?
If it's a wrap, it is The Mummy, starring Brendan Fraser. Mummy.
An incredible movie. A movie that really just, it's a bisexual touch point for so many people my age. Okay, dang. All right, well, what's my follow-up question? A wrap. Sensible.
Which was not on the cover of that Mummy issue? Was it Star Wars Toys Hit Stores, The Goo Goo Dolls, or The Matrix Decoded?
I'm gonna guess The Matrix Decoded.
No, it's The Goo Goo Dolls, relevant at that time, but not on that cover.
My recent rediscovery of Baby's Black Balloon really led me astray here. That song slaps, though. I don't know what I was relating to when I was listening to it at 15. I don't know what I'm relating to now, but it's a banger.
And for Dan, your next cover headline comes from April 1992, and it reads, I'm going to kick Leno's ass.
April 92. I'm trying to remember which iteration of the Late Night Wars that was. Seems a little later than Arsenio, but that does seem like a very Arsenio quote for the cover of Entertainment Weekly. So I'm going to try for Arsenio.
That is correct. Nice job. But which of these topics was not on the cover of that April 92 issue? Is it TV and abortion ads, 25 years of Spinal Tap, or Last Action Hero?
Whichever one it was, it is very clear to me that this issue had enormous sell-through from newsstands due to the appealingness of all three of those cover letters. This is 1992, and Spinal Tap certainly came out later than 19... I'm doing some math here.
We're all
67?
Trying.
67? So I'm going to say it was not Spinal Tap.
No, unfortunately, because their first fictional hit was in 1967, EW was super cheeky about the 25th anniversary. Last Action Hero would not be released till the following year, so that was not on that cover.
Once again, tripped up by facts about the Spinal Tap extended universe.
Yeah. You have to honor the lore.
Yeah, it's in canon. I understand that now.
And for David, from July 2008... turning the greatest graphic novel of all time into the riskiest superhero movie ever.
I worry that I'm too early, but I'm going to go ahead and say Watchmen because that seems like the consensus greatest of all time. Nice.
Yes, Entertainment Weekly publishing stories about it a full 9 months before its release.
Cool. They probably didn't even know about the sex scene in the owl ship yet. They might not even have filmed it.
What a world to still live in, to be blissfully unaware. All right, David, but which of these topics was not on that same July 2008 issue? Was it Star Trek, Terminator, or Lady Gaga?
Let's say that Star Trek was not yet in the mix.
Still rumblings of J.J. Abrams' reboot the following year. Lady Gaga was not on that cover. Lady Gaga.
She was still like showing up in Sopranos episodes.
And for Margaret, your cover headline comes from December 1990. Look out, Mel, Clint, and Sly. Hollywood's newest hunk is 4'4".
This is a real head scratcher. 4'4".
Such a classic entertainment.
I know, it really is.
I think this is too early for it to be about the guy who played Mini-Me in Austin Powers. So, gonna put that out of contention. 4'4" could certainly be about Air Bud, but I don't really see him as a peer of Mel, Clint, or Sly. I'll go ahead. I will just ask for that hint. Thank you.
The article covers this actor's previous work with John Hughes in Uncle Buck.
Okay, great. That really narrows it down. I guess I'm just going to guess Macaulay Culkin. Hey!
There you go.
Thanks, Macaulay. Old pal, what are my follow-up questions?
Which topic was not on that December 1990 issue? AC/DC, The Doomsday Biz, or Milli Vanilli?
I'm gonna guess The Doomsday Biz, because I've never heard of that.
No, sadly, that was a sub-headline on that cover. Milli Vanilli was not, however. Milli Vanilli.
Well, they were fake, so joke's on them.
Yeah.
Back to Dan from March 2016. How I conquered the internet without showing my butt and my first year in America.
March 2016, a simpler time.
No.
I'm going to say that this is a person from another country, a different country that's not America.
Wicked astute.
Yeah. I'm going to say that this person does not have a butt. This is a buttless person. I'd like to have a clue, please.
The article contains so much discussion of the automobile-based breakout segment of this show.
Oh.
Oh. Margaret, it sounds like you know it. Why don't you go ahead and just tell me?
I mean, I are you sure? I think it's James Corden.
That's obviously what I was going to say.
We do have to count that as a pass, however. I'm sorry, but James Corden is correct.
No problem.
So he doesn't have a butt, huh? That's interesting.
All right, Dan, which of these topics was not on that same March 2016 issue? CW superhero crossovers, The Dark Universe, and Hogwarts theme park?
I'm going to say that the answer is the Hogwarts theme park, which opened much earlier than that.
Apparently, we were still talking about it. The Dark Universe, not on that cover. The Dark Universe.
Which we, in fact, were never talking about, so I should have guessed.
All right, for David, your next headline comes from March 2001, and it reads, Lips, Hips, Superpowers, Sci-Fi Siren for the Next Generation.
I would love to believe that the Species franchise somehow got a cover in Entertainment Weekly, but I don't believe they did, so I will request the clue, please.
The article contains lots of talk about James Cameron.
2001, you got your lips and your hips. You got a sci-fi siren for the whole next generation. I guess it's really a question of what James Cameron was up to around then. Because he basically started Avatar in 2001, and then it came out in like 2011. I really don't think I know. Is it Shakira?
The answer, as always with James Cameron, is a submarine.
Oh, God.
Correct answer there. James Cameron at that time was working on Dark Angel, the Jessica Alba TV series.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I mean, you could have given me an infinite number of guesses and I wouldn't have gotten that. So I feel better now.
Great. But what wasn't on that March 2001 cover? Was it Rivers Cuomo, Survivor, or Ed?
Ed, like the TV show. Not Ed, yes. The movie where Matt LeBlanc plays baseball with a chimp. That's a different movie. Also called Ed. I think that it was not Rivers Cuomo. All right.
No, no Weezer on that cover. And that'll take us into a score update from Scoremaster Dan.
We've had a bit of a shift in the scores. Right now, Dan has 55 points, Margaret's ahead with 70, and David is in the lead with 90 points.
That really went differently than I thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
It sounded at first like I was winning. But then the other people's scores were higher than mine.
Yeah, I thought I had been ejected from the game entirely because of the whole the James Cameron thing and saying Shakira.
All right, for Margaret, your next headline is from July of 1990. Scared Silly, how they made the sequel wittier, better, and more subversive.
Because I feel bad about accidentally scuttling Dan's chance for 5 points by being too much of a know-it-all about James Corden. I'm not going to ask for a hint, and I'm just going to guess that this is about Child's Play. I feel fine losing that point.
No, that is about Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
Sure, that makes sense, too. That makes sense, too.
Scary, silly horror. You were right there.
Yeah, I was dolls and or toys that kill you. It was in the ballpark.
But which was not on that July 1990 cover? Tina Turner, Captain America, or Marion Barry?
I hope I am not being played for a fool here, but I'm going to... God, Marion Barry is what a weird one. I'm going to guess Captain America still, though, anyways, because I don't think he was doing anything significant in 1990 to get an Entertainment Weekly cover. I'm probably wrong.
No, you're right.
Oh, my gosh. That's great news.
Well done.
Marion Barry was on the cover?
Yeah.
Marion Barry was. The 1990 Captain America movie starring Matt Salinger, J.G. Salinger's son, did not make the cover of Entertainment Weekly.
But Marion Barry made the cover.
What was Marion Barry on the cover of EW for?
Collaborating with James Cameron, the filmmaker, James Cameron.
All right. For Dan, from November of 1995. You'd be smiling, too, if you just got paid $20 million.
I'm gonna say that it is Jim Carrey.
Yes. Just for fun, do you know what movie he got paid $20 million for, breaking that barrier for actors?
Wasn't it The Cable Guy?
Yes, it is The Cable Guy. And then that movie made barely that much money back, so nice job.
But is a lost classic and one of Matthew Broderick's finest performances.
Totally, totally. All right, what was not on that November 95 cover? Leah Thompson, Power Rangers, or Powder?
There was a period between 1992 and 1997 when Leah Thompson was on every cover of Entertainment Weekly. So she is not the answer. Power Rangers were popular, but don't seem that Entertainment Weekly-ish. And Powder was newsy because of the various scandals surrounding its making and release. I'm going to go with the Power Rangers.
Wow. Nice logic. Great for work. 10 points. To David, your next headline is from June 2006. After 19 years, 5 directors, and 30 other superhero movies, can he still fly?
It's got to be Superman, right?
Full answer, please.
Oh, gosh. The stupid Bryan Singer one. So Superman... I'm not good at these sorts of titles here. What was he doing? Let's say Man of Steel, actually. That's the only one I remember. I should ask for a damn clue. Nope.
That stupid Bryan Singer one was, Margaret?
Superman Returns?
See, that popped into my head.
Yeah. With Kate Bosworth and Brandon Routh?
On our Hallmark podcast, we talked about a Hallmark movie with Brandon Routh in it, and he was delightful.
That's exactly. That is water finding its own level right there. Yeah.
All right, David, which topic was not on that same June 2006 cover? Bone Thugs and Harmony, Lost, or Entertainment Websites?
we love the websites, folks. I think Bone Thugs was on the way out by 2006, so Bone Thugs was not on the cover. All right.
Yes, very strong follow-ups throughout this whole game today. Thanks. Great.
I really want to read their article on Entertainment Websites, and I want to know if it mentioned Television Without Pity.
Oh, they did, but not that would be like early aughts. We got a couple articles, or not articles, but mentions.
Good to know.
All right, for Margaret, your final EW headline is from March 1995. A star is made going from video vamp to movie actress in 3 minutes.
I think that's too late for it to be about Madonna. So I will go ahead and ask for a hint.
The article contains a lot about Aerosmith music videos.
Oh, okay. Dag nabbit. So it is Liv Tyler.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not Liv Tyler.
Should have tried being a 16-year-old boy in 1995, IMO. It's Alicia Silverstone, right? Has to be. Yeah.
Yep, Alicia Silverstone. Co-starring with Liv Tyler in the Crazy video in 1993.
Well, I was half right.
Yeah, you're right. But who was not on that same March 95 cover? Phil Hartman, Rap Tragedies, or Infinite Jest?
Wow. Okay, so I feel like Infinite Jest is put in here to throw me off the scent, to be like, what would Infinite Jest be doing on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? And I, too, wonder what Infinite Jest would have been doing on the cover of Entertainment Weekly. But I feel like it's too easy for it to be that. I'm going to go with Phil Hartman. Nerds.
No, you psyched yourself out. It was Infinite Jest.
Infinite Jest plays me again. Jeez.
Came out in the late 90s.
I bet if I'd read more than 179 pages of that book twice, I would have gotten it.
All right, for Dan, your next headline from December 1997. Winona Ryder battles the mother of all monsters.
97. That was before she was battling the monster of shoplifting and the media.
And misogyny.
And misogyny. After she was battling the monster of Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Yep, I did it again.
It's really reckless.
In 97, I would like a clue, please.
The article concerns clones and a basketball scene.
In grad school, I saw a lot of movies. So whatever this is, I walked to the theater in DuPont Circle. It was what was playing next, and I just walked in and saw it, and then it instantly fell completely out of my brain. So I'm going to say that it is the Royal Tenenbaums.
David Roth?
That is an incredible answer. Is it like the Alien Legacy or whatever the Junae Caro Alien sequel is?
Alien to the Power of Three.
Alien Cubed is David Fincher from 92. Right. 97 is Alien Resurrection.
Alien Resurrection.
Alien Resurrection.
Okay. Alien Cubed, like all the characters except for Sigourney Weaver have the names of 80s baseball players. It's a really weird thing. There's like, it's like a Reigns and a, they're not a strawberry, but you know. Nice thing.
Look, you mean she gets sports in here.
I did.
Good job, David.
They're going to take it out.
Yep. Yay! All right, Dan, but which was not on that December 97 issue cover? Was it The Lion King on Broadway, The Postman, or Christmas Music?
The Postman, open parentheses, Il Postina, close parentheses?
No, the other one.
Oh. Well, Christmas Music, they put that on the cover every December, obviously. It's the only thing going in music. So I'm going to say in 1997, it was The Postman.
Correct. And closing out round two, David, your headline is from September 2003. America's best-selling author tells us why he's calling it quits.
Wow, who... was, I mean, the idea of quitting at that time when you're on top writing the sort of books that get covered by Entertainment Weekly. Mm-hmm. Why would you step away? But I feel like I'm going to need to take a clue on this.
Mm-hmm. He says that he wanted to do just 5 more books and finish a fantasy series. And well, as it turns out, he never actually stops.
See, this is where, again, I'm suffering as a lifelong cool guy. I don't really know that much about different fantasy series.
Too busy knowing sports.
Yeah, that's like cool guy stuff. Yeah, like I said. I don't know. Dan knows it. Go ahead, man. Let's hear it.
Well, both Dan and Margaret know it. I'll count it off. Ready? Here we go. This author's name. 3, 2, 1.
Stephen King.
Oh, come on. Obviously a lie.
Yeah, he did like a retirement to juice sales.
Yeah.
He's the Steven Soderbergh of authors.
It was like, wasn't it right after he got hit by a car and he was really super depressed?
Yeah, he got hit by a car and got addicted to painkillers for a while. And after that, he was going to quit.
Wow, I did not know that about Stephen King.
He wrote a whole book about it, yeah.
All right, David, your final follow-up. Who was not on that September 2003 cover? Cloud Atlas, The Four Feathers, Bennifer.
Cloud Atlas. a book that I read, but which I don't think was a movie at that point. So I'm going to say Cloud Atlas.
That's all the right. True.
Well, that'll finish up round two. Up next, one more score break from Dan and onward to the final round. Before we get into our last round of play, it's time for the home version. Listeners correctly guessed the answer to Dan's riddle by the time next week's episode comes out, and you can win fabulous non-prizes like rights to name a score break. Dan?
A nuclear watchdog movie got me buzz, and I always knew who Deep Throat was. I got heartburn from a spouse's fling, but at the end, I remember nothing.
Think you know that answer? Find the page for this episode at usaquizshow.com or just check that link in your show notes and show off that pop culture knowledge. Thanks for that riddle, Dan. Take us into a score update.
Absolutely. After two rounds of play, it's time for the Werner Herzog score break. Werner Herzog. He won't speak French even if you put a gun to his head. After two rounds of play, David has 110 points and is in the lead. Dan is close by with 95. Margaret has 80 points. That means she'll get to go first in round three, and she'll have to get four questions correct in order to move into first.
Super tight game, so those standings are definitely still very malleable. It's time for everyone's last opportunity for big points. It's the lightning round.
Wow.
Players have their choice of categories and have 90 seconds to answer as many questions in that category as they can. 10 points for each correct answer you can provide. Today's categories are Full House, a whopper of a category, State Your Business, and Yolking Around. Now, while the names of those topics are a little bit mysterious, do your best to choose something you're going to do well on, or perhaps try to keep something easy from a fellow player. Margaret, in third place, you get to choose first. Which of the four categories would you like? Once again, they are Full House, a whopper of a category, State Your Business, and Yolking Around.
I'm gonna go with State Your Business in the hopes that it will be about movies with states in the title. Am I right?
You're pretty darn close, because it is State Your Business. Every pop culture related answer in this round will have the name of a U.S. state in it. So not necessarily
okay.
movies,
all right.
anything, but every answer will have a state in it. 90 seconds on the clock. Time starts when I finish reading the first question. Margaret, are you ready?
As ready as I'm ever going to be.
This character's real name is Henry Jones Jr.
Indiana Jones.
This Coen Brothers flick stars Nicolas Cage and Holly
Raising
Hunter.
Raising Arizona.
In a 1998 hit, Train tells us she never compromises, loves babies and surprises.
Meet Virginia.
The recent Broadway revival of this 1943 Rodgers and Hammerstein musical was surprisingly racy.
Oklahoma! Exclamation point.
Katy Perry and Snoop Dogg had a pop hit with this 2010 song.
California Girls.
He won Oscars for Training Day and Glory.
Denzel Washington.
This 2017 drama follows a poor family living near Disney World.
Pass.
The 2019 revival of this alien-centric teen show added the state name to its title.
Roswell, New Mexico.
Keanu Reeves plays this character in the original Point Break.
Johnny Utah.
This David E. Kelly movie has Russell Crowe leading a local hockey team.
Mystery Alaska?
This 90s cop show is being remade with Jared Padalecki replacing Chuck Norris.
Pass.
The Ray Charles cover of a 1930 Hoagy Carmichael tune is the official song of this state.
Georgia on my mind?
His plays... Tennessee Williams question that we got cut off at the end there, but a great round from Margaret.
Margaret had a great round. She had just two passes. First off, Margaret, what was that 2017 drama following a poor family near Disney World?
Florida Project. It's such a good movie. I'm so mad I missed that.
Thank you. I bring it up all the time, and Dan and Dave always tell me that it's pointless and dumb. Thank you for supporting me. It's one of my favorites.
I said nobody ever gets it right, and that was correct. I'm still right on that.
That was correct. I love that movie dearly, and I so missed it like a fool.
And the second pass was about a 90s cop show that was remade with Jared Padalecki replacing Chuck Norris, and that, of course, was?
Walker, Texas Ranger.
Mara had a fantastic round. She had 10 correct answers. That gave her 180 points and puts her in the lead. It means that Dan is going to have to get 9 questions correct in his round in order to pull into first.
All right, Dan, once again, your choices are Full House, A Whopper of a Category, and Yolking Around.
I'm going to go for Yolking Around because I love eggs.
Absolutely right on it, because the yolk is a part of an egg. This lightning round is all about eggs in popular culture.
Fantastic.
Have fun, bud.
I did my PhD on eggs in popular culture.
Or strippers in popular culture, as David Chen would call them. It's a callback to David Chen's appearance on this podcast. Right.
It doesn't count if you say it's a callback.
All right. Yolking around, eggs in pop culture, 90 seconds on the clock. Dan Coyce, are you ready?
Yes.
This boxer gets his daily protein from a glass of raw eggs.
Rocky.
The Mandalorian retrieves an egg from a mudhorn for members of this alien species.
I don't know, the Yodas.
Jawas. This title character wins a bet that he can eat 50 hard-boiled eggs.
Billy Madison.
Cool Hand Luke. She vomits at the sight of Dwight Schrute eating a hard-boiled egg at his desk.
Angela, what's her face?
Pam Beasley. Mm. Daniel Day-Lewis kind of likes the poison mushrooms in his omelet in this movie.
That is, of course, the movie Phantom Thread.
On the animated series, this Pokemon never fully broke out of the egg it hatched from.
Yolki.
Togepi. Three dragon eggs hatch in the season one finale of this series.
Game of Thrones.
Jack Nicholson demands his eggs over easy in this Adam Sandler comedy.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Anger management.
Oh, my bad.
Gunters chase the Halliday Easter egg in this pop culture obsessed novel and film.
Ready Player One.
A Fabergé egg is the target of the heist at the center of this swanky sequel.
Ocean's 12.
When he was a lad, this Disney character ate 4 dozen eggs every morning to help him get large.
Gaston.
Correct, but after the buzzer. My, what a guy. All right, Scoremaster Dan, let's get the Player Dan report.
Absolutely. Dan had no passes because he was that confident in all of his incorrect answers.
Yeah,
he got
really good.
5 questions correct, giving a total of 145 points. That's not a bad score, but not enough to pull ahead of Margaret, who has 180 and the lead. That means David is going to have to get 7 questions correct in order to force a tie and 8 questions correct in order to win outright.
All right, David Roth, your 2 remaining lightning round category options are Full House and A Whopper of a Category.
I think I'm going to go with the burgers. Let's do, Whopper of a Category, please.
And you are correct in that it is indeed about pop culture burgers. 90 seconds on the clock. David, are you ready?
Oh, wait a second. Give me a second. Yes. Okay.
Harold and Kumar craved sliders from this burger place.
White Castle.
Michael Keaton portrayed McDonald's CEO Ray Kroc in this movie.
The Inventor? Yeah.
The Founder.
Sure.
On Bob's Burgers, Robert Belcher Sr.'s restaurant is named this.
Pass.
This fast food operation catered the 2016 and 2017 Vanity Fair post-Oscar parties.
In-N-Out?
He will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Quimpy.
This hamburger movie was based on a sketch from Nickelodeon's All That.
Good Burger.
In 1985, Burger King asked you, where's this man who never ate at the franchise?
Waldo?
Herb. According to Vincent Vega, the French call a quarter pounder this.
Royale with cheese.
This singer likes his with lettuce and tomato, Heinz 57, and French fried potatoes.
Pass. I mean, good burger, though.
This was the signature burger at the Peach Pit.
The Zach Burger.
The Mega Burger. Homer Simpson ordered 700 of these on an oil rig.
Whoppers?
Krusty Burgers. This video game had a chef walk over ingredients to create burgers.
Oh, Burger Time.
Yes, Burger Time at the buzzer and accepted.
I just want to note that as soon as you named the category, I wrote down Burger Time.
Yeah, I was hoping we'd get to Burger, because I'd played that, but I never saw Bob's Burger somehow.
All right, Dan, let's get the David report.
Boy, this is going to be really tight. We have two passes to start off with. Robert Belcher Sr.'s restaurant is named Big Bob's Diner. And it's Jimmy Buffett who likes his with lettuce and tomato, Heinz 57, and French fried potato.
Typical.
Cold kosher pickle and a cold draft beer. Well, good God almighty, which way do I steer from my favorite song when I was 10 years old? So that means our final scores are Dan with 145 points.
Ha! Nothing could possibly have beaten that.
David with 170. Oh, and our winner with 180 points, it's Margaret.
I blew it.
I feel really good about that. It's I don't know where Mystery Alaska came from, but
That was when I knew we were in the presence of legend. But seriously, was that the best score in a lightning round ever?
No, our record for lightning round, even in this season, has been 13.
Wow. Oh,
well, geez, Margaret, why didn't you do that?
Look, I'm glad. I feel great about what I managed.
Yeah, that's it. Really is impressive. Like, I can only tip my cap.
Indeed.
Well, big congratulations to you, Margaret. But that does mean that it's the end of the road for Dan and David. Guys, super fun game. Thank you again for being here. I had a ton of fun. Dan Coyce, where can our listeners find more of you out in the world?
You can always listen to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast, or you can listen to the podcast that I do with my daughter about movies we watch together called You Pick Tonight.
Wonderful. And David Roth, where can our listeners see more of your stuff online elsewhere?
They can read the words that I write at defector.com, and they can listen to me in the podcast that is attached to defector.com, which is The Distraction, or they can hear me talk about Hallmark movies in the aforementioned Hallmark movie podcast, but which I do with Jeblon, and which is 100% Hallmark wholesomeness.
Excellent. But again, the biggest congratulations of the day go to Margaret H. Willison. Margaret, you're moving on to the Season 2 championship match next week.
Terrifying.
In the meantime, what pop culture blind spots are you going to fill so you can bring your A game?
Well, I think my biggest one's got to be The Simpsons, which I've never watched because my extraordinarily permissive parents decided that was the one thing that was a bridge too far. Hobbs and Cool and Life on the Streets at 7, totes chill. But The Simpsons, absolutely not. Bart was too disrespectful to his parents. So I got to bone up on that.
Amazing. And where can our listeners find more of your work?
They can listen to me on Appointment Television, a podcast about TV, a medium I famously do not watch. They can catch me sometimes on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, one host of which I may or may not be going up against in this final. I don't actually know yet. And they can catch my writing at my newsletter, Two Bossy Dames, on Substack, which is 2TWOBossyDames.substack.com. And I'm on Twitter, too much.
And listeners, you can also follow Margaret as the rotate refresh emoji on our Season 2 Battle of the Podcast bracket. That'll wrap it up for this week. Be sure to join us next week when Margaret will take on Fug Girl Heather Cox and Chris Sims from the War Rocket Ajax podcast for the Season 2 Championship Bout. I've been your host, Taylor Cole, and on behalf of Scoremaster Dan and Production Master Dave, thank you for listening to the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. Back before the lightning round, Dan had a pop culture riddle. Think you know that answer? Find the link in your show notes or find the page for this episode at our website, usaquizshow.com. While you're there, make sure to check out all our past episodes, check season brackets, and maybe apply to be a contestant on an upcoming season.
You can always find us online on Twitter and Instagram. We're at usaquizshow on both.
The Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show is created with love by our Quizmaster and Scoremaster, Dan Gnome Sino, our host, Taylor S. Gnome, and our Production Master, David T. Gnome.
Sorry, I don't have a gnome pun for the end. I'm tapped out. I'm done. Bye. See you next time.
Taylor.
Yeah.
Do you know who Marion Barry is?
No idea. I just sat in silence.
Yeah, no, he was the mayor of It was the mayor of Washington, D.C. who got kicked out of office for snorting crack, like, on camera while he was, like, in the mayor's office.
And the Rob Ford of his day.
Yeah, and then got reelected.
What?
He went to jail for doing crack and then got reelected afterwards.
That's incredible. That's amazing.